I'm in Fairbanks, but I've been up here for about 2 or 3 months each spring, mm-hmm. working with Craig George and Lewis Brower and mm-hmm. Joe Levitt.
So
where were you guys hunting this year? Which
we actually didn't go out this spring. We decided to stay on land. We didn't go out on the ice this spring. Mm-hmm. Family decision. We had lost my nephew.
Oh.
And the family was taking it pretty hard. And we decided to take a break, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Are you related to Michael Donovan?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had told me about that. That's sad. Sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, it was. We were getting ready. We were actually going to go out, and then got close to the season, and between my wife, my son, and my dad, and my sister were really taking it pretty hard, and we decided, well, maybe it's time to take a break, and there's always another season, you know.
Sure, yeah.
Especially after having successive years of, catching a whale, and it takes a lot. Once you land a whale, it takes a lot of time and energy and work mm-hmm. to prepare for an aqueduct, so.
Yeah.
We were enjoying our break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand that. But I had questions that were specific to
this season?
This year, but I also have a lot of questions just of how the ice behaves in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, did you have any comments just on this year, how things developed and went throughout the year?
Well, that was kind of part of the reason for our decision was the poor ice conditions. You know, everything started to pile up as far as reasons not to go, and the ice conditions was one of them. Mm-hmm. Just the fact that we didn't have much multi-year ice, and having experienced a couple years ago when we landed two whales, the second whale was kind of late in the season. It wasn't as late as some years that we've been out there, but it got real dangerous just in trying to pull the whale up, hauling all the muktuk, you know, to the safe ice.
Yeah.
And we had about 3 or 4 people that fell through the dangerous ice right there at the site and on the trail. I had one snow machine that got dunked. We were able to save it, you know, but just not wanting to experience that again. And we have a real young crew. My dad just turned the crew over to me and my wife, and we have a lot of young men on the crew that are that don't have much experience, and so all of these factors went into play, and we decided to take a break and whatnot. But yeah, it was the conditions of the ice that really played a big factor in that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're also interested in is, you know, as I said, we have that radar, and we have. We do a lot with satellite imagery,
mm-hmm.
but we're interested in learning how we can make these types of information more relevant to what the community is interested in or mm-hmm. or could use for safe
right.
hunting and safe travel. And so my question is, you know, what are the main things that you look for when you're making a decision about whether or not to go out hunting in a specific area?
Well, depending on how the ice conditions are, we typically look for multi-year ice that we can safely trek out on, for one thing, but we also look for areas where there's some good size pressure ridges that we know, like some of the stuff that's hanging out, keeping the ice right now, that's been grounded to the ocean bed, to have as a safety area, you know. And then, of course, you want to try to find a spot where you can easily or safely pull up a whale to butcher, you know. And years back, we really tried to make sure that we have a source of glacier ice nearby for drinking water purposes, you know. It's kind of hard to find nowadays, too.
Yeah.
But one of the suggestions I would make as far as, and these maps are really helpful, you know, when we have our whaling captains meetings before we all actually get out on the ice, and we've already, to some degree, we've already been making trails and whatnot, is the maybe defining a little bit more, explaining the ice and how it looks on the maps.
Yeah.
You know, if you pointed out thickness, estimated thickness, and or whether it's multi-year, thin ice,
yeah,
young ice, and having notes like these waypoints that you're putting on, that would probably help.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that we can do sometimes. Because other times it's even difficult for us to, even though we look at this type of image a lot, it's sometimes it's very questionable whether or not something is multi-year or it's usually easy to pick out the ridges, but
right.
We're still trying to figure out a good way to identify the multi-year ice because we haven't been able to do it very well where we've been on the ice and we found a piece of multi-year ice, and then we look at the image, and it doesn't look any different.
Right.
It's often difficult, but I think that's a good suggestion. We could have a bit more information on what actually is being seen.
Yeah. Either by pointing it out and writing it on each area, or just have a legend.
Yeah.
You know, if it's consistent as far as looking at some of this ice. I mean, just from looking at this. Without having a real trained eye on these kind of images, I would think some of these dark areas was thin ice.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the lighter areas are the thick ice where we have pressure ridges, you know. And maybe that's accurate. I don't know.
No, well, it's accurate for certain times of the year. For the most part, this doesn't depend on snow because these waves that come from the satellite go through the snow.
I see.
But once the snow gets wet, it changes. So actually having some kind of instructions on how to interpret this would actually be a very good thing to put on there.
Yeah.
We can do that next year. It helps because I often have to ask questions
right.
to others who have more experience.
Yeah. And then you can also point out where the moving ice starts.
Yeah.
You know, versus the landfast ice, that would probably be helpful too.
Yep. Yeah. Well, another question I had is, do you like what you've learned from your elders growing up? Does the ice behave differently south of town than it does to the north of town? When how it sets up and how it builds ridges throughout the year and breaks up in the spring.
Yeah, no. From what I've been told, and from some of the elders that I've had some experience with, every year would be different, and based on what's happening out here during the winter months. How much ice is piled up, how much pressure ridges are built, how much multi-year ice there is and where. Looking at the conditions, you know, whether you have some good flat ice to where you can pull a whale up, be able to butcher it, and then trying to figure out where you want to go. We've been up north in front of Berenik and or closer to the point at sometimes in front of town, and sometimes we'd be out towards Hollywood or Monument, and it all depended on how the ice conditions were. But as far as the current and then the ice, it is a little different. it tends to be a lot more stronger current up north, where you have the two main currents meeting just past the point, and that's where you can see a lot more higher pressure ridges and or more solid ice in some of that area. But at the same time, the risk of being out there towards the latter part of the season, you're going to start seeing a lot stronger currents out there. And so that's the danger of that. That's the risk that you're going to have to calculate in any given year if you're going to be out there. Of course, you know, once you're out there, you're always monitoring the current and what the ice is doing, what the wind is doing, and base your go, no-go decision whether you're going to continue to be out at the edge of the ice or not, and whether you're going to strike a whale or not, because if you know it's going to be, if the current is going to get too strong in a certain way that you're not going to be able to tow the whale in, you're not going to think about striking a whale, because it's going to go to waste, you know, and the safety of the crew being first and foremost as a priority, you wouldn't want to endanger the lives of the crew, which lays heavily on any captain bringing the crew out there. And so it is more dangerous up north. Stronger currents can change quicker, whereas to the southwest side, you don't have that. But then again, it depends on the formation of the ice, how much pressure ridges you have, and what the weather is doing, you know, and the time of the season.
Yeah.
You know, so there's all these different factors that are always in motion, that are always at play, and timing is everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one simple answer for it all, you know. It's a moving target, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and timing is everything that you have to really watch if you're going to be out there. And you know, some folks risk it or miscalculate the timing of the current changing or the weather turning on you when you've already struck a whale, and you have to get it up on the ice as fast as you can to get the butchering done as fast as you can and get the people out of there.
Yeah.
And like I was pointing out a couple of years ago, on the second whale we caught in the season, we worked as fast and hard as we could to get it up, butcher it, get as much meat and muck duck out of it, and haul as much as we could to safety. The very next day after we got done hauling all that, the ice was gone.
Yeah.
And so that's how quick it can start to happen if you're not careful. And there's been situations where my dad has told me of experiences where they've found themselves out there in dire straits where the ice come in and they had already what they call pamilta, when they get out on the boat and they paddle either way or out into the ocean, and ice closed in behind them and they're stuck on, they have to go to shore at ice where there's no trail, and stuff like that. Taking that risk and taking too much of a risk, I would say.
Yeah.
So.
Is that the word you use when they're actually chasing a whale, or any time they're paddling?
Well, when you bilto, it's just when you chase the whale. You know, when you bilto, you're taking off from the edge of the ice and you're going to go, you're launching out and you're going after a whale that's going by. And pamilktok is basically when they feel that it's a need to take off from the edge of the ice, and again, it depends on the distance of the lead and which way the whales are running at that given period of time. A few years ago, we had when we caught a whale, I think it was in 2004, spring of 2004, we were out 3 miles from the edge of the ice. Went out there paddling.
You paddled out 3 miles?
Yeah, wow. Paddled out, and that's what you call pamyoktok. It's here. Basically, the word pamyoktok is you're going after the whale, and pamyok means the tail of the whale, and so you're chasing whales, you know. But we were out there, and we were 3 miles from the edge, and we ended up striking the whale, and we caught it. But it was, we had to get to where the whales were running. They weren't coming to the edge of the ice like we were expecting them.
Yeah.
And just all day long, for several days, we were watching them going out about 3 miles off the edge of the ice from where we were, and we decided, okay, maybe this is what we're going to have to do before the season starts to get too late.
Yeah.
And do what we have to do. So that's what we ended up doing, was going out.
I didn't realize that you guys went that far out.
And again, you know, you calculate your risk as far as whether you have a motorboat handy, ready to go and launch at any time, and the amount of men you have at camp, whether you have, you're going to leave, you have to leave a few men to man that motorboat, and they'll have to be ready to launch anytime you're needed for assistance and or emergencies. And so once we struck the whale out there in the open water, they were able to come and assist us with the motorboat. And, so it all depends on the situation and the men available at the camp and what you're really after.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you go out there, your focus is on landing a whale to feed the people.
Mm-hmm.
And how far are you going to go to make it happen?
Yeah.
You know, and then so it's different for everybody. Everybody sees it a little different, and folks have different ways of approaching all of that.
Yeah. Well, one thing you mentioned that I've heard people say over and over again, I still don't think I completely understand, is you said that there's two currents up by the point. Is that when people say that, they're referring to current in this direction and a current in this direction?
Yeah, basically, you know, it's been my experience, and I've seen it, and true to the elders' sayings about the two main currents past the point. You typically have a main current from the east, and you have this other current that's going north from the Chukchi side. And where they meet, you can really tell right past the point. You can really tell where it meets, and it becomes like a meeting point. And that tends to go out to the northwest. And if you read some of the history books and some of the stories that people have told, that's exactly what happened when one of the old whaling ships ended up getting trapped in the ice, was it was taken past Barrow from the point. Once it hit that other current, and they're all ice jammed, it would take them out northwest.
Out here somewhere.
Yeah, and when it's in open water, even without the ice around, when you're traveling, you can actually feel it on your boat when you cross the currents, and your boat will turn.
Yeah.
You can really tell whether you're coming or going.
Is that pretty much all year, or is it just during hunting season?
You know, that's a good question.
Because I've heard some people say that the current shifts in early May, and I haven't quite figured out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, one of the things is for as much science that's done, people, at least, it's, you know, the science hasn't studied the current, so
right.
I'm pretty sure that the people here know a lot more about currents than what's in the
future. Yeah. When you look at the map of Alaska and how it's situated between Alaska, Russia, and through the Bering Straits, and you see how when it's all covered with ice and it starts to open up and crack up, the shifting of the currents, you'll basically start to see the ice getting flushed out, and it'll pushed back in, and it's different every year, you know, but typically you'll see it, it'll push out and then push back in. And then when you look at the map of Alaska, you'll see from Barrow all the way down Point Hope and south, where that ice is getting flushed out to the south, right through. And it does change in May and later May. It'll start to change on you more often and quicker. Where it can either turn around to where it starts to take the ice out and or turn right back around and start pushing the ice back in. One of the sayings that that they always reminded us of, how they start to see a pattern in the weather. When weather change, be expecting some kind of weather change. Whether you're looking out at the sky and the clouds and the sun and the moon, stars, and or the current of the ocean. And they always say the ocean current leads in what's about to happen with the weather.
Yeah.
That's pretty typical, and that's what they pass on, is that that's why you watch the current of the ocean constantly when you're out there, because it's going to take the lead. It's going to take the lead as far as what the wind direction is going to do, high pressure, low pressure. It'll start to move ahead of the weather.
Yeah. So when you're out there, do you drop a sounding line? Or?
Yeah. You always have to keep track of what the current is doing.
Do you do that just at the edge, or do you cut holes?
People do it differently. Typically, we just go to the edge, you know. But if you're going out there, and you know, and more so nowadays, where you run into a lot of thin ice, it would be make sense to just cut a hole in the thin ice where it's easy to cut through and check out what the current's up to, you know. And a lot of the local seal hunters will, or they should. Be doing that, but it's interesting, you know. It's it all depends on what's been passed on to you from either your elders or folks in the community. People wanting to share their experiences and teaching the younger folks what's happening out there. Always warning of danger or anything like that. Like the one year where we early winter where the ice had come in and it was pretty frozen in, and it kind of looked like it was gonna stick, you know. It's probably October. We already had ice already jammed up to the edge, and one day old man Roxy Wilk got on the VHF and said, hey, guys, whoever's going out on the ocean, be careful. He said, the ice just opened up. He said, just pass the Ukoksi right over here, what we call Ukoksi, this, where Mound 44 was. I don't know if you're familiar. Just right, just past the bingo hall over here.
Okay, yeah, I think I know where that is.
He said, the ice opened up here, right up to the edge of the beach. Right to the beach, and he said he was about to go seal hunting, and he almost fell in. And it was a perfect 90-degree cut, like a cut right out. And then the main ice was still sticking here in front of Barrow, going north, and probably 3 miles out.
It was the current that took it out.
Yeah. The wind and the current just had taken it out, but it made a perfectly 90-degree cut, like, and that portion of the ice went out, while this part was already either frozen enough or some parts of it had already built the pressure ridge to be anchored on the seabed, you know.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, some of the hunters that are always willing to share their knowledge immediately and the danger that's out there and give you a warning, you know. So.
Yeah, talking with Joe Leavitt in particular, because when I've spoken to him a number of times, but he talks so much about the currents and how important they are, and you know, it's a little bit frustrating from my standpoint because we're doing a lot of work, but we don't have the instruments to really to look at the currents just yet.
Yeah.
we miss a huge piece
mm-hmm.
to really understanding what's going on.
Yeah, and you know, as time goes by and you gather that traditional knowledge, you'll, and at the same time you're gathering your scientific knowledge, you'll probably start to see them. Blend.
Well, I mean, just talking with you and others, it really, because you know, our instruments, we're not collecting knowledge, we're just collecting, information, you know. It doesn't make much sense until we start to talk to people and they explain, you know,
right.
why this is important and why this is not important.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's different every year, that's for sure. No 2 years are ever the same. It's always different.
Well, the one thing you mentioned is you look for the Koliuk.
Koliuk, yeah.
Koliuk. Is that in your recent experience, have you seen a huge change in
seem like there's less.
Yeah.
Seem like every year there's not as much as there used to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of been my experience here in the past few years anyway. You know, when we were growing up, seemed like we had a lot more of it all around.
Yeah.
A lot more glacier ice that would be available. Close by.
When you guys are out there, if you would put a camp out in the ice, would you try to put it on multi ice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
you try to set up camp where it's safest, but at the same time, you try to make it more convenient to where you're going to do the hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And not always just. I mean, you're not out there just to camp out, you know. There's been some years where we had a bigger tent for when we have a huge crew
mm-hmm.
and you want another tent set up, and you'll have that further back towards the land on safer multi-year ice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of the times it would be where we call the Nangyaktuvik, where we're going to retreat
mm-hmm.
whenever the ice conditions gets dangerous out and further out by the edge.
Yeah.
And so some years, you know, you can have a second tent, and that's the more longer term. But when you're getting out to the edge of the ice, you're out there to hunt the whale, and sometimes you just put a wind blind
mm-hmm.
and or a smaller tent, and at all times you're ready to knock it down, pack it up, and take off from there in a matter at a moment's notice, you know.
Yeah.
So although you want to try to keep a camp in a safe multi-year ice, but you're out there, and the purpose that you're out there is to hunt the whale.
Yeah.
And you're going to decide whether you're going to just put a wind blind or put a tent up.
Yeah. Well, it's we were up here this year. I went up here with Roy Malik.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that we've been doing is taking samples of multi-year ice and try to figure out how old it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so we found a lot up here. And what's interesting is, as I said, we can't really identify in these images very well. So sometimes you can if it's a lot, but
mm-hmm.
You know, we had up until that day we had thought there was almost no multi-year ice around, but then we saw a bunch up here.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we're trying to figure out is a way to track how much is actually brought in along the coast.
Yeah.
Year after year.
Yeah. I guess a lot of that, yeah, depends on where it's coming from and where it ends up, you know, landing close by or uh, like, when was it last? Not too long ago, where a huge chunk of ice had broken off of the main ice pack closer to the pole, where that ended up around here, close by here, and that one year we had a lot of multi-year ice that was close by.
Was that just 2006, a few years ago?
Might have been. I'm not
sure. That was my first year coming up here, and I. Mm-hmm. I, at that time, I didn't have the experience to decide which was multi-ice and what was not, so I couldn't tell my own. I think now I can tell, but
yeah.
That year a lot of people had said there's quite a bit of multi-ice around, much different than what it had been
right.
in the recent years.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that current, man, it just starts to eat the ice from below. So quick, it's at a faster rate than some of us realize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even more so than what it's doing up on top.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing that you got to really watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's
well, that was related to one of my questions. Is what have you been taught? Like, are the key things to look for when the ice is changing from ice that may be safe to ice that is no longer safe?
Some of the things that are real critical, your observation of the ice and when you first go out in early season, when you're breaking trail,
mm-hmm.
or whether you're out there, you know, before you even start breaking trail, observing how it looks, not just at the surface, but where there's breaks,
mm-hmm.
and what it looked like has happened, because
mm-hmm.
that'll tell you a lot, you know. Pressure ridges, studying the pressure ridges. Whether it's just a bunch of thin ice that piled up, or if it's a bunch of multi-year thick ice that has piled up.
Mm-hmm.
And right away you can tell whether it's been scraping the seabed, where you're going to see a lot of bits of gravel with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And then the ice around that, the surrounding ice. And whether it was a part of the action when it took place, when the pressure ridges were formed,
yeah.
the ice around it will give a telltale. You'll be able to tell whether that ice was part of what pushed this together, and mm-hmm. or if it's newer ice that just kind of glued itself to it, you know. And so from your first observations, and you keep an eye on that area of ice throughout the season, and you can tell right away where it's deteriorating in certain areas.
Yeah.
If you have huge pressure ridges and right next to it you have what looks to be real smooth, freshly formed, or you know, 1 or 2 year ice,
mm-hmm.
you're going to really watch that and see what's happening, whether it starts to melt faster and or get darker.
Yeah.
And so based on that, you're going to know what's happening from underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll give you a telltale of the stability of the ice that's around it.
Yeah.
And so throughout the season, right up until you decide to pull up, you're going to keep an eye on that ice to monitor it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And judging by what's happening with it, whether it's safe or not, you're going to have to make a determination whether it's safe to continue traversing over that ice. And or there's been times where we've made a trail and ended up catching a whale, and even during the process of butchering and starting to haul, we make a different trail to haul it through a safer area when it's required. If you feel that even before that, and you have to really warn folks that are going to go out there, because you're going to have folks trying to get to the whale, and first and foremost, you want a safe trail for them to go out there. But if it's really necessary and you want to get out there quick, and that's another risk that you're weighing, you know, be able to get out there. And if the season is starting to get close to the end of the season, or, you know, it all depends.
Is there a, I've heard, I was talking to Nate Olmon, and he was talking about that dark ice when it starts to melt below. Is there a specific term that people use to describe that?
You mean in Inupiaq?
Yeah. It's not really related to my work, but I'm just interested in the words.
I'm pretty sure there is. I'm pretty sure there is, you know, there's over the years growing up, we would be out on the ice right up last, I think the latest we've been out there, I believe, is June 16.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that's about.
And I think the latest we've landed a whale, 1987, I think, and that was June 15.
Hmm.
It was late in the season, but we had a lot of multi-year ice, and we were able to pull the whale. It was quite a huge whale. It was a big 50-plus foot whale. But the ice conditions were good.
Yeah. Did you have water along the beach like this, though?
No. It was just melting a little bit right on the edge, and that was about it.
Hmm.
But it, as far as ice from, you know, the main Tuvok,
yeah,
it was thick. It was multi-year thick ice. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been out there.
Yeah.
And then just a few years ago, we had been out till about June 3, where the ice conditions were deteriorating real bad, and then. But there were several of us crews that had gone. Have a good evening, sir.
You got your jacket, huh?
I don't know. Who is this that?
That's from your house. I thought it was Arlene wore this home from your house one night.
Really?
It's like one of your clan?
I don't know. I was wondering where it came from.
I hung it there because I thought it was yours.
I'll take it out.
Maybe it's Arnold.
Where several of us crews, we weren't seeing whales on this west side, and so we decided to go around the point and go to the east.
Mm.
And that's where we chased whales.
Above the point?
We were like 20 miles east of the point.
Wow.
And different current on that side, and we had, I don't think anybody landed a whale that season, but we sure chased a lot of them.
Mm.
And that's where they were hanging out. There's whales hanging out to the east, and we've experienced that both in the spring and the summertime.
Yeah.
I mean, the summer, fall time,
mm-hmm.
fall season. That one year where we were out here fall whaling, 3 weeks, we didn't see whales. We seen a few grays, but there we were going back and forth between the point and Monument, and even further south from Monument. Well, it was 2 weeks, and after 2 weeks, we decided we were to go check further to the east, and sure enough, there was whales hanging out at around 20 miles east of the point.
So you guys go out there with the outboards?
Yeah, with the motorboats. We went out there, and they must have been feeding. They, you know,
mm-hmm.
were whales that probably were feeding there, or I don't know. That's where they were hanging out, and that's where we ended up harvesting a whale.
Mm-hmm.
So it's different every year, different depending on the conditions of the ice, and you know, I would think the what the whales feed on, both in the spring and summer. I mean, spring and fall. But yeah, it's from what little experience I have, you know, these are some of the things that I've observed and learned a little bit. Try to remember what some of the elders have passed on.
Well, that's helpful. I appreciate you taking the time to talk about it. For me, it's much different. I'm just piecing together different conversations, but I'm learning a lot, and it really does help.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since I plan to be up here again. So
yeah,
this year I learned a little bit more.
So how much time do you spend here? Every year?
Well, the last 3 years, probably between 2 and 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Just mainly out at Basque.
Right.
Working at Basque and a little bit with the wildlife department.
Mm-hmm.
But, we're still kind of designing instruments and making, trying to figure out the best way to make measurements that are useful.
Yeah.
You could be out there all day making measurements that aren't useful.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's kind of what we're working on.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's that monitoring and experiencing it over a course of years to really start to know more versus taking a sample at a given period of time or a given time and in the time of the year and wouldn't really justify or really any meat to what you're trying to determine, you know. Good night.
Yeah.
So it's just like those folks that came up in the early days and stayed here for a year and went back and wrote a book about the natives and like they already knew them all just from hanging out for 1 year. They don't even know what the heck happened 50 years before that. And
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, every year's different.
Yeah.
With the ice and with people, too, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, man. It's ever-changing world.
Yeah.
Ever-changing world. Yeah.
Yep. Well, the one thing I should have probably explained at the beginning is I work for the university, and the university has rules.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to be able to, when we did interviews, you could just give people cash, but now it doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
Right.
So there's a couple of things that I ask you to sign. One is that we're putting a lot of this information into science reports. It's not about whaling, but more about ice conditions and how ice conditions are changing and some of the things that we're finding.
Mm-hmm.
But we will plan to include, you know, some of the conversations we've had with hunters about why things are important and why things aren't.
Right.
And so the question is, can I put your name in there as a source of information?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So that's what that question is.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, it's just...